Thank you. And I'd like to thank Mario for inviting me to Lisa 08. And I got to say, I'm a little bit intimidated with this audience because I'm not a technologist. So I was kind of talking with him last night about, you know, what do you want me to say? I'm not, you know, these guys can probably going to hack into my computer, and you can probably do that. I know you can do that. Please don't do that. I need my computer. it's my personal computer. I need to take it home to my wife, who's on bed rest. And if you've ever dealt with a woman on bed rest, believe me, you don't want to take away a laptop from her. Excuse me? No, it's not. The question was, is it Windows? It's a Mac. Again, it's my personal computer, and I had to convince her even to bring it out here. I told her that there weren't going to be any computers out here. So, So, anyways, a little bit of background about myself. I am an analyst in the Directorate of Intelligence at CIA. I'm not a technologist, as I mentioned before. And but I, previously to being at CIA, I was at an intelligence officer in the Air Force. Don't bring up the oxymoron jokes, so anyways, I was in the Air Force for a while. I worked with B-52s at Barksdale Air Force Base, then went to the Pentagon for about 3.5 years, and then I was at CIA working at various offices. Analytical offices throughout the Directorate of Intelligence, which we'll kind of get to a little bit later, and why that matters. But if we can switch over now. I guess I am. So, yeah, I can work the box, so I guess I'm a technologist. This is an example of eating our own dog food. We're actually looking at IntelliPedia right now. This is IntelliPedia on an unclassified network that we can dial directly into. We don't use PowerPoint anymore. A lot of colleagues and I just have moved these presentations into IntelliPedia, and people are always asking, when we go to these various conferences, people are asking, oh, well, are you going to send your slides? And we're like, well, do you have an internet connection? We'll get to our slides that way, and it avoids being able to having to shuffle, you know, Mongo PowerPoint files back and forth. I realize this might be difficult for people to see in the back. For those of you who do have computers, everything that I'm going to talk about, because this again is behind a firewall, is available if you do a Google search on Sean Dennehy Enterprise 2.0. That first link is actually the briefing that my colleague Don Burke and I gave at the Enterprise 2.0 conference in Boston of this year, and it pretty much follows the same outline. So if you're having a hard time reading what's up on the screen, you can go to that page and you can tag it in delicious or whatnot. So let me just go back to this briefing page, and this is an interesting thing that we came up about. You know, Mario talked about policies and working through policies and different issues. And we can read what's on the screen right here about, does your organization have some of these characteristics? Insist on doing everything in channels. Haggle over precise wordings of communications. I'm an analyst. We love to haggle over precise wordings in our documents. Advocating caution. Question whether a decision lies within the jurisdiction of that group, or do we have to go to another committee, or do we need to go to another board to get something approved? Where do you think these come from? Any idea? Lawyers, okay. Looks kind of like a little bit like standard operating procedure in most bureaucracies today. But what you might be interested to know is where these come from is a document. If you're not familiar with the OSS, it's the predecessor organization to the CIA, and it was what's called a Simple Sabotage Field Manual. It was produced in 1944, and I actually have the document open here. So here's the manual. You can actually look for it up on, it's online, an Army website has uploaded it. It's from 1944. We can go through the next couple pages here, and you'll see the... you know, there's a signature by Wild Bill Donovan. The document's dated January 1944. And then if we go into the sections, The whole document, it's about a 22-page document, focuses on sabotaging rail lines, sabotaging shipyards, sabotaging various things. But the last two or three pages of the document focus on organizations. And if we just kind of scroll through that, it talks about what we need to do. Insist on doing everything in channels, make speeches, you know, question jurisdiction, advocate caution, all these. And it had sections for, you know, how to defeat. If we could get an asset or in another organization and we wanted to make that organization ineffective, this is how we would do it. All right? So just take that for example. And that's, and the interesting about that is we were able to come across this 1944 document because of these social software tools that were implemented in the intelligence community. This document was scrolled away in some shared drive somewhere, only accessible to a couple few people on a team that knew where it was. Someone stumbled across it and then blogged about it, and then now the community has it, and now you're learning about it. So that's what we're trying to do with these tools in the intelligence community, is expose some of that data that is hidden or squirreled away in different shared drives and whatnot. I'm just going to scroll down a little bit and talk about the genesis of this effort, which was really a paper that was written by Calvin Andrus. He's a CIA employee for an internal white paper competition, probably very similar to these DALISA papers that were just awarded here. It's unclassified papers that can be written by anyone in the community to talk about how we can change the intelligence community, to improve the intelligence community. And the first time they ran this back in 2004, one of the three winners was Calvin Andrus' paper called The Wiki and the Blog. And everyone, because they focused on the beginning portion of the title, said, oh, Wiki and the Blog, that's all about technology, right? But they forget the second half of that, which is towards a complex adaptive intelligence community. And if you read the paper, and that paper is also online, if you Google the Wiki and the Blog, you'll be able to find it on the internet. It talks about changing the culture of the community to allow people to share information, share ideas, and allow individuals to act, to kind of break down some of those issues that we saw in that sabotage manual. And we think, even though this paper was written for the intelligence community, it applies to just about any large organization, some of the principles that are outlined in it. So that was really the genesis on it. And let me tell you, when I'm a member of a panel of analysts called the Technology Advisory Group, and have been a member there for many years. And Cal came in and talked to us about this paper, and we all looked at him and thought he was crazy, including myself. We said, wait a minute, we're going to have this wiki thing where people are going to be able to update things in the middle of the night, and we're not going to be able to see what's going on. And myself, personally, I had been an analyst working Iraq, the country of Iraq, prior to the run-up to the current conflict with Iraq. And obviously there was a lot of politicization and other issues that we were dealing with in the run-up to the war. And this idea that anybody can go and blog with their ideas and have make updates in the middle of the night didn't rest very well with a lot of the analysts in the room, including myself. But then again, I didn't really know much about wikis and blogs. So then I went out and educated myself about the tools. And what I was really interested in, what really caught my attention first, was this history tab, where I can click on the history and see the entire history of the article, including, and this is another reason why we use a wiki to brief, is because I had to make updates to this briefing today. So we could just go through and we could see who made edits, and also we can see what the briefing looked like at a particular moment in time. And that was really important for me as an analyst, because what was in 2004, 2005, what was my office dealing with? Again, the office that was working Iraq, everything, all the questions were, what did you say about WMD in 2002? What did you say about Ahmed Chalbi in the Iraqi National Congress in 2002? What did you say about the insurgency in 2003? And we would have to go back and search shared drives and search databases and, you know, and search personal files and ship all of this stuff up. And it was really, really complicated to try and pull all this information together. Whereas if we were in an alternate universe where we were just contributing to a wiki, that, you know, that's a simple, a couple mouse clicks and we can get to where we were, what we were saying when. So that really appealed to me. And then also what really appealed to me was that discussion tab, which if you haven't gone to Wikipedia and looked at the discussion tabs or participated in some of the discussions on Wikipedia, it's fascinating. And it really, when I started reading through those discussions that were happening, and then this is just a discussion for this page, and it was we saw these debates going back and forth, a lot of the debates that we were having in the intelligence community, except typically those debates would happen in email over phone calls. And I said, well, this is really great because now this captures all of those positions out there so we can learn, especially in the wake of 9/11, we are bringing in a whole range of new people to the community, and we were trying to get them up to speed. Well, it was they weren't privy to those phone conversations. They weren't privy to those emails because they weren't on the distribution list because they didn't exist in the intelligence community back in, you know, 2001, 2002. Now we could start capturing that. So that's what really appealed to me about Intellipedia. Blogs, I still wasn't too sure about. I thought, well, that's going to get people in trouble. People are going to go off on their management or whatnot. But what I found out after working with this for a while is they are definitely two complementary tools. And I'll get into the tools right now. Talk about what is Intellipedia. Again, you're looking at Intellipedia. It's based on the same software as Wikipedia, open source. And it's on three networks. We're looking at the... and that's one of the updates I had to make was the controlled unclassified information, because we've changed the term for what used to be called sensitive but unclassified. Now it's controlled unclassified information. I'll have to learn. So we're looking at that network. It's also available on the secret network and available on the top secret network. And some people look at this and say, well, isn't that a problem? You have really three air-gapped instances of, you know, the wiki. And we said, yeah, but that problem existed before we deployed the software. We had that problem. But what this is doing is it's exposing that problem to a much larger audience. Because before these tools were available, typically people came in, worked on their computer, on their network, and didn't really think about what was going on Cipronet or on the unclassified network. Now this challenges them to think, well, I better go down and check to see what's on Cipronet, see what's down on the unclassified network. A little bit of a difference between Wikipedia is that if you're on any of the networks, you can see and read the content that's on Intellipedia. But in order to make changes, you have to establish an account. And if you were going to implement this in any type of large organization, we would espouse this type of approach as well. You want to be able to track down who's making these edits, and tie it to a username. And that's really important because, again, that gets back to what Cal was talking about in his paper, is trying to allow individuals to act. And in the intelligence community, your name and your personality is really important. So it's really critical that you don't want to be able to have things that are tied to your name that you wouldn't stand by. And that's actually one of the key things that also happens. I'll get a little bit into Trogdor later, but we've had some people create the Borat page or the Metallica page in Intellipedia, and we're like, what are you doing? You're not making my job any easier trying to sell this to people. But what we also tell people is, hey, that edit is forever tied to your name. So when you want to coordinate something that's really important, and I see that you're making edits on the Borat page and Metallica page, what do you think I'm going to think of your contributions to our analysis? I'm going to think less of them. So tying that person to a name is really important, and also enforces a degree of collegiality across the community. So, and while Intellipedia gets all the press, and that's kind of what we're briefing off of right now, it is a range of tools that are being implemented. And what I should mention right now is that even though I am from CIA, none of these tools are deployed by CIA. They are deployed by what's the DNI. It's called the Director for National Intelligence. It was established in the wake of 9/11, and it's kind of the organization that oversees the entire intelligence community. And they have been able to provide these tools for the community. So these are the community's tools, and when we talk about the CIPRNet community and we talk about the UNCLASS community, really not even just talking about the intelligence community, but we're talking about the national security community. If anyone in here is working with DOD or working with some type of government, you can get access to the unclassified network through your sponsor and be able to use these tools. And we've encouraged that. We've actually had one of Chris Rasmussen, a person over at NGA, kind of has the same role as I do. He actually just recently went up to Canada, to Ottawa, to help them with their instance of GCpedia, Government of Canadapedia, and they're actually taking some of the guidelines that we've developed off of IntelliPedia and bringing those over. And Chris just went and sponsored them for access to the unclassed version of IntelliPedia, because we want this to be truly open source. We want to gain access. We want people to be able to fight the war that we're in collaboratively across. It's not just a U.S. war. So these tools, IntelliPedia, the first three is what we really consider the three main tools, which is IntelliPedia, blogs, and then TagConnect, which is our version of social bookmarking. How many people here have heard of Delicious? Okay, yeah, this like I said, this is a technologically crowd. Usually when I mention Delicious, people are like looking behind them to see if they put the cookies out. So TagConnect is our version of Delicious. We also have Intel Docs, which is basically a web-based foldering system that you can upload your shared drive to the web. Gallery is similar to Flickr. iVideo is our version of YouTube. When we first started talking about YouTube, people were like, what do we need YouTube in the intelligence community for? We don't need people uploading videos of their dogs on skateboards. And we were like, no. I mean, think of all the videos that we have in the intelligence community, the Bin Laden videos, the Predator videos, including actually the first day it was up and operational, there was a video uploaded that was classified that was used in support of an operation. It was fantastic because we weren't shipping around in email these Mongo video files that you launch and then you don't have the right codec or you don't have the right player installed. Now we can just upload it and use that, so, and put it on the platform. Intel Link Instant Messaging and Really Simple Syndication. Really Simple Syndication, we talked about, is really the glue that holds all these tools together. And a lot of this, falls from Andrew McAfee's paper called The Dawn of Emerging Collaboration, or Enterprise, the person who coined the term Enterprise 2.0, and we've adopted that. All of these tools are being made available. If I would have come here 2 years ago, there wouldn't be this huge laundry list. There might have been two or three of these tools available. And that's one of the other things that we're educating our workforce about, is that of this constant change, and that there will be more and more tools deployed, rather than a lot of our workforce, they just want one tool. I want one. The myth in the intelligence community is this one-stop shop, or even in the world. I mean, you watch a commercial, we're your one-stop shop for all your jewelry needs. Doesn't exist. I mean, Chris Rasmussen, who I mentioned earlier, talks about you can't go to Walmart and get an MRI. Just can't do it. There is no one-stop shopping. And I don't know why, when we come into an intelligence community with this need-to-know culture, and it's all based on compartmentalization, that we think we're going to be able to create a one-stop shop. It just doesn't exist. Differences, I've already covered a little bit of the differences about the attribution. Well, Wikipedia allows for quote-unquote anonymous. It really tracks you to your IP address, so it's not really truly anonymous. But Wikipedia is focused on being an encyclopedia. So as you all know, there are hundreds of Wikipedia articles that are deleted every day because someone goes in there and tries to create a page on their garage band in Cleveland and we're the best band and here's our set list or whatever. And people, it doesn't meet their qualifications for encyclopedia articles, so it gets deleted. We're taking a little bit broader approach with our instance of IntelliPedia. there is so much information that we want to make available, like this briefing. We wouldn't be able to kind of build this briefing if we really were strict deletionists in Telepedia. So we're letting it be a little bit broader. We're letting people create pages about their organizations so we can learn about all the various parts of the intelligence community. Wikipedia, few contributors were responsible for the majority of edits. We're trying to change that in the intelligence community. We're trying to get everyone to contribute. Are we there yet? Absolutely not. If you walk out of this room thinking that, wow, the intelligence community really has this Web 2.0 thing nailed, we are not there. It's still a very small percentage of the community that's contributing, but it's amazing what a small group of dedicated people can do when they're and can accomplish when they're working on a platform and not working in channels, not working in shared drives or email, and just putting all of their information out and available for the community. Wikipedia enforces a neutral point of view. We think this is actually the wrong approach for the intelligence community. We want what we're calling an attributable point of view because we can't really agree on anything. So let's figure out what we can agree on, and let's figure out what we disagree on, and capture those conversations again that are happening in email and over the phone, or perhaps over conference room tables. Let's capture those disagreements out on the platform and moving out of those channels. In the when we first set up this Intellipedia and the whole social software kind of thing, we set up a training program because we knew people weren't going to be comfortable with wiki text, and people weren't going to be comfortable putting their information out after being kind of hammered over and over about security and need to know. So we really had to kind of handhold in this. We called it a sabbatical. We didn't even call it training because it really was trying to change kind of the culture that we were growing up in. And over the course of about a year and a half, we finally settled on kind of these three core principles for how social software can be implemented in an enterprise. And we think this applies not just to the intelligence community, but to any enterprise. The first one is to work at the broadest audience as possible. And this is where I mentioned my background about being in the Air Force intelligence, being at the Pentagon. When I was in those positions, I had access to JWICS. But do I have access to any of the work I did while I was in the Air Force? No, because it's all squirreled away in shared drives or whatnot. So it's over at the Pentagon somewhere, maybe, hopefully. Probably not doing anyone any good because probably no one knows where it is because it was over 10 years ago now. But now, if I had these tools available to me and I had been able to work out on the platform, I would be able to benefit that, and that's from that information. And we really, this is something that the intelligence community is trying to push, is a concept. We're trying to steal a little bit from the military, and we've developed something called joint duty, where in order to kind of move through the ranks, you're going to have to work at different parts of the intelligence community. So, for example, I might have to go from CIA to NRO. And if I, am working traditionally in shared drives and email and Word documents, PowerPoint files, and I go to the NRO, all that stuff stays at CIA. However, with these tools, if I put them out on the platform, if I still have access to the network, I can go there and I can just start working again, and I'll still be have access to all the data that I had. That's a challenge because, again, we have a lot of these compartmented information that can't be put out on the platform. And so that's when another colleague of mine, Mario Meta's Don Burke, came up with a concept called breadcrumb. And so what you would do is put as much information you could out at the broadest audience and then leave a breadcrumb to the more sensitive data. So the sensitive data that you can't share. And that breadcrumb could be a link, or that breadcrumb could be a note at the bottom of a page saying, look in this folder for the sensitive data, or for more information, call Joe, and here's the phone number. But at least you have it at the broadest audience to begin with. And really, when we're switching between jobs, people are always worried, well, I'm going to lose access to all my data. Well, in the intelligence community, what we're concerned about is losing access to the really sensitive data, or that's what the security types are that we're going to have sensitive data, and then it's going to move to this new position, you're still going to have access. Well, you will lose access to that, and that's actually better security, in our opinion, than how we typically approach it now, where people just try and save everything in one Word document, and it's all mixed in together, both the sensitive data and the stuff that we could share at the platform level. Thinking topically versus organizationally, this, as simple as it sounds, is really a challenge in our organizations because we want our organization to get credit for what we're doing. And so immediately what we'll see is just create the page. Instead of creating the CIA page on Fidel Castro and the NRO page on Fidel Castro, just call it Fidel Castro, and we'll all work on that page. But it's amazing to see just how people approach these tools. When you watch them first use the tools, what's the first thing they work on? They work on their user page, set up their user page. The next thing they do is, well, I want to create a page for my team. So from the very mindset of how people approach is, well, I want to make sure my team or my organization gets credit first. And we need to kind of challenge that and say, let's work at the broadest audience. We have, because Intellipedia has been relatively successful, we have implementations of wikis across the intelligence community, including some that are internal to our organization. So we have a CIA wiki that's internal to CIA. It's not working out so well because that ownership issue has crept in. So we use Lotus Notes at CIA. We have probably 6 pages on Lotus Notes because each organization wants to take credit for, their Lotus Notes page. So that doesn't help Google at all because when Google looks, it's like, which one do I serve up? We got 6 pages here. So if kind of encourage people to working topically, vice organizationally, it's beneficial for all. And then the third one, which is the most critical one, is to replace existing processes. And this is what we've challenged people to do. It's what I'm doing right now. I would have normally briefed this off of PowerPoint. Now we're not using PowerPoint anymore. We've moved this to Intellipedia. And we're kind of eating our own dog food in that respect. And if we talk to people during our sabbatical sessions and say, if you're going to add this to what you do normally on a day-to-day basis, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to blog in addition to everything else I'm going to do. Face it, you're never going to get around to doing it. You're too busy as it is right now. So what we encourage people to do is look at your email inbox. If you're getting too many emails, these tools can help you. So if you're sending out a blast email to get people's thoughts on a particular idea, take the contents of that email, post it to a blog, and then send a link around. And say, this is where we're going to have the discussion out here instead of in that channel of email. And in the first couple times that we have people do that, inevitably someone will reply back in email, oh, here's what I think. You're like, no, the comments go out here. but it's a challenge. We are trying to change the culture. And we've had, I'll talk about an analyst who works on southern Iraq, and he follows various leaders in southern Iraq. And he actually created a page on this leader in southern Iraq, and he sent the link around and said, I'm relatively new. I'm sure you guys have more information on this guy. Just add it to the page. And sure enough, he got the email back saying, you should change this and you should change that, and here's why. And he went back to that other person and said, well, why didn't you just edit the page? You can edit the page and make the changes. And he was like, well, I didn't want to out you in front of everybody in the community, so I figured I'd just do it behind the scenes. And he's like, no. So he showed the person, here's how you make the edits, and here's how to change. So again, that's not technology. That's not a technological problem. That's a cultural issue that we need to work through. It's a really interesting story. His blog that he created is called Ayatollahs Are Us. So he uses this to kind of and as well I'll talk about it a little bit later, is he uses it just to kind of capture information and be able to put his information. He didn't know anything about wikis or blogs before he came to our sabbatical program. And he's relatively young, but just didn't know anything about these tools. And when we introduced these tools to him, he said, you know, I'm going to use these instead of using Excel or Word or shared drives or email. This is where I'm going to put my information. And it has worked for him. So a little bit about lessons learned. Let me check time. Lessons learned that we've heard that we would encourage for other organizations as well is to start small. Intellipedia, again, when we... That initial reaction that I had to Cal when he came and spoke to us about, you know, hey, we're going to have wikis and blogs, is the reaction I faced from just about every audience that I went to and spoke to in the intelligence community. That'll never work. We're different. You're going to destroy analysis. It was pretty bloody in the early going. So what did we do with Intellipedia? We didn't try and tackle the most controversial issue with Intellipedia. The first thing we accomplished right out of the gate, an acronym list. Because God knows the government has enough acronyms, and the intelligence community has more, and the military has even more. So now we probably have the largest acronym list in the U.S. government. It was a little simple thing, but it was helpful for people. And even there's been studies done in the intelligence community of Intellipedia's effectiveness, and they've interviewed people on both sides, whether they hate it or whether they like it and use it. And even the people that despised Intellipedia and thought it was completely wrong that we were doing this, grudgingly admitted, well, I do have the the acronyms lists bookmarked because it's got a lot of good stuff on there. And why is that important? Well, it's really easy for someone to go in and add a simple acronym. Oh, my organization's missing. I'll add the acronym for my organization. And yeah, my boss isn't really going to get all too upset if I add the acronym. I'm not going to compromise national security or anything like that. So it was a really simple edit. It got people into the space, and it was very low threshold type stuff. But it worked, and it started kind of with that, and then it built from there. So the other thing, which I have a link for KIS. I'm not sure. This might have timed out. So let me see if we get. Yep. Thanks. KIS, as you can probably imagine, it stands for Keep It Simple. And again, that's one of the things we have. Some organizations that have gone into Intellipedia and they've essentially moved their entire web shop into Intellipedia. Okay, this is where we're going to put all of our documents and all of our finished intelligence and whatnot. And that's kind of good and bad because what they've done is we've got some pages in there that are completely, pimped, what we call pimped out with CSS calls and HTML and everything like that. And that doesn't help the average user, i.e. me, when I need to go in and make a contribution. It's very intimidating for the average user to go in and add their contributions. So we kind of advise for people, a guideline that we have is to keep it simple, focus on the text, don't try and focus on making it look pretty. This isn't finished, or what we call finished intelligence. This is just a place. This is a place where we can capture our knowledge and capture a lot of the stuff that kind of hits the cutting room floor when we're producing those finished intelligence documents. When I say finished intelligence, those are the documents that we'll place in front of a policymaker or in front of a warfighter and produce it. And typically what we're hammered on is, well, policymaker or the warfighter only has limited amount of time, so we just got to boil this down to a page and a half. Well, that analyst or that person that produces that document has a wealth of knowledge that can't fit into that page and a half. Here's a place to capture that. By keeping it simple, people can capture that information. Let me go down. Be selfish. It sounds odd, doesn't it? We're talking about sharing and putting stuff out on platforms. But really what it comes down to and what we found the most successful uses of Intellipedia is from people being selfish, those people that have moved from organization to organization. They keep losing their data every time they move. They're frustrated. So they now they have a place where they can put their data. And when they move to the next job, they'll still have access to their data. That analyst that works those leaders in southern Iraq, he created a page on these leaders in southern Iraq and started most of them, if you're familiar with Wikipedia, if there's no content behind a link, it's red. So this big laundry list of 100 leaders was mostly red because we didn't really have a lot of collection against these folks. And so he created that page. Again, he came through our class and he said, this is just where I'm going to do my work. Well, it turns out in the first several weeks, he started getting reporting from the field on the first five or six people on his list. And then he started getting reporting on the next five or six people. And he was like, this is kind of odd. Well, it turns out someone in the field came across his page, saw all the red links, and said, oh, I got someone who can report on that. Let me go, you know, get some information for him. And so when he created that page, Charlie, when he created that page, he wasn't thinking, oh, I'm going to put this out there and people are just going to help me do my job. He started with a selfish goal of, I have all of these leaders I have to follow, and I need to make sense of them, and this is where I'm going to put all my information. And because he put it on the platform, others could actually help him, whereas if he put it in an Excel spreadsheet and a shared drive, no one's going to see that. And when he moves on to his next position, probably people are going to look at that Excel spreadsheet and not be able to make sense of it, and they'll start a new Excel spreadsheet. Well, here we can kind of evolve those issues as they go along. Grassroots versus top-down. At first, when we first implemented this, we were all about, geez, if only the DNI, Director of National Intelligence, would just come down and say everyone has to have an Intellipedia page and everyone has to start putting their data in Intellipedia. And we've gone 180 degrees out from that now. We are all about doing this grassroots because of that selfish reason where Charlie said, I'm just going to use this, and it appeals to him now, and he wants to update it rather than having someone tell him, no, you need to keep up these pages updated. It appeals to him. Again, as I mentioned earlier, it's spotty across the intelligence community as far as how many people are contributing to this. What we talk about is there's really pockets of individuals that are willing to do something different, willing to make that leap from how they normally do business to a new way of doing business. But when they make that commitment, they are really committed to Intellipedia and trying to make it successful. Which is amazing. I mean, we have these lanyards that we created that we were paid for out of our own pockets, and people see the lanyards and say, "Hey, how do I get one of those? Do you have those? Come to my office. I'll show you my contributions and all the pages I've created. But can I get a lanyard? I mean, it's a $2 piece of cloth. It's not even $2, but people want to be associated with something bigger than themselves." And that's been really powerful. So, in addition, whenever we have seen kind of top-down directives we're going to use Intellipedia to accomplish this mission, what we have seen is the antibodies form within the organization saying, no, we can't use it because of X, Y, or Z, or, oh, well, no, that we can't put our data out there because it's too sensitive. They'll grasp at any reason not to change. In a lot of the top-down effects, there was, when we first set this up, we were talking about doing a national intelligence estimate in Intellipedia. It failed miserably because it was top-down. There wasn't any buy-in from below. And in the middle of the organization also kind of said, no, we're not going to do that. We're not going to play, especially if I have to force other people below me to do it. So we've kind of completely gone away from the top-down approach. It is helpful to have, an advocate at the top level. One of the, great success stories is not only am I briefing off of Intellipedia, there are parts of the joint staff at the Pentagon that are doing their briefings off of Intellipedia on the CIPRNet network. And that's been a bit amazing because you walk in and you see a three-star admiral getting briefed off of Intellipedia rather than a PowerPoint presentation. And you know how the military loves PowerPoint. So it was really refreshing to see that. And that happened when we went and we briefed that admiral. It was her staff who was really kind of upset with, well, we don't want to put the official position out on IntelliPedia. We have to decide that in advance, right? And then we'll put it out there. And she was kind of talked to her staff and said, no, this is I want that discussion out there. I want to be able to see that discussion. So it does help to have leaders in various positions that will contribute to that. But for the most part, we actually see grassroots being the more effective approach to these tools. It makes it a little bit uneven, but it actually it gets more people committed to the tools themselves. The power of one. I mentioned about the joint staff and how they're using it. It really started with one individual who stumbled across IntelliPedia and said, hey, maybe we can, and he saw, I think, Don and I brief off of IntelliPedia, and he said, you know, we should do the joint, you know, the weekly update in this page, because he was tired of getting too many emails, and he was the person that was compiling all the emails and putting it into a weekly report. He said, now we're going to do it over here. And because he made that decision, now the joint staff is moving towards these tools. Another instance where a CIA contractor actually, when we first started this back in 2005, we had, you know, the browsers that we had at CIA were pretty lousy. We had IE6 and Netscape, and it was, you know, so we needed a more modern browser. So one of the contractors that supports us actually brought in Firefox and made it available on the developmental server. And when the security types or whoever found out, they were about to basically take his badge away and walk him out the door. And he was like, well, are you going to walk out everybody else on the development team that's using Firefox now? And so what happened was we went from that, this person who made the risk of bringing in Firefox and making it available on the development server, to a little over a year later, Firefox was the standard browser in use at CIA. But it took one person to make that leap, to make that challenge. And again, like Scott Yaroshuk at the Pentagon, who said, I'm going to do things differently. Roy did something differently. And that, you know, challenged the system, stood up against all those kind of policies and bureaucracies and made the change. And now, again, everyone gets to benefit from it. And then lastly, again, we talked when we initially set up IntelliPedia, we were trying to learn about as much as we could about Web 2.0. We had a conference where we brought in the likes of David Weinberger and Clay Shirky and Eugene Kim and Ross Mayfield, and it was just a fabulous panel. And one of the things that Eugene Kim said was, you know, you have to have a sense of play with these tools, because, you know, you're not going to, as we all know with Web 2.0, you're not going to be able to control it. You have to allow some degree of sense of play, and that's where we get into these user templates. So we have a user template for Trogdor that people will add these little user templates to their user page. So if you go back to my user page, I unfortunately don't have the Trogdor template on mine, but what happens is, you can add these templates. So, you know, a member of the intelligence community, a member of CIA, a member, a former member of the Air Force, part of Yammer, all these little templates. These things took off like wildfire, and people were creating, I'm a guitarist, I'm a musician, blah, blah, blah. And people were like, what are you doing? This is crazy stuff. And we said, yeah, but there's how many people have sent these, you know, joke emails around as well? So there is going to be a little degree of sense of play. But what this allows you to do is, again, if you go in, if people add these, I can go and say, well, who is using, or who is a UAS, a U.S. Air Force veteran? And now I've got a connection with all of these people that are veterans of the U.S. Air Force, and the software makes those linkages for me. And then when I go to somebody's user page and see, oh, well, you know, they were in the Air Force, or, you know, they went to Notre Dame, you know, and I'm like, oh, I already got that kinship with someone because they went to the same school, or they're a musician too, or they like Trogdor or whatever. And that's what we're trying to build, is those linkages between people across the intelligence community. So With that, I'll stop, and then I'll open it up for questions. I'd ask if you do have questions, there's microphones, in the two microphones in the center aisle and two on the outside aisle. Yes, go ahead.
Hi, my name's Mark. I was just curious about the staleness issue. How do you deal with, you know, retiring data that is no longer accurate, no longer applies? How do you... one of the issues that we've had with data collection at my company is dealing with that, having, you know, there's no one who sort of owns the data. If they leave their role or whatever, it just sits out there and it's inaccurate. No one updates it. So how do you deal with that kind of problem?
Okay. That is a challenge. That's a challenge with Web 1.0, a challenge with Web 2.0. I mean, what we used to joke about when we first deployed these tools is there was always these websites that, you know, that weren't being updated because the web admin left or whatever. And so people would go and look at the website and say, that guy's no longer in that position, or that's no longer my phone number. And with what we used to say is, well, with these tools, you know, it's, and people would say, well, someone needs to change that. Well, who is that someone with these tools? That someone is you. And we used to, and we've had examples. One of kind of the myths of these tools is it's all about young people. And actually, the number one contributor on the top secret network is 69 years old. 69 years old. He worked at CIA for 40 years and then just recently retired and is now a contractor. But he was creating, he was coming in on weekends. He called himself an addict, an Intellipedia addict, because he was coming in on weekends unpaid because he was trying to capture all of this knowledge that he had done his 40 years in the intelligence community. And he was creating, you know, electronic archives of information that he was pulling out of his files and that we only had in hard copy. So now we have things where people in the intelligence community can learn about what we did back in the late 60s, early 70s, stuff that I know we don't have electronic files, we have to go to some archives to find, and because he went out and created those pages. And to get back to your issue about the things that are out of date, he created a page about a particular issue that he worked back in the late 70s, and so he took all of his information that he had on that issue, and he started putting in and creating this page. And then all of a sudden, like, he came into work the next day, and there it was probably several days later, maybe weeks later, but he got this angry message from someone else in the intelligence community saying, hey, why are you editing this page? All of your information is out of date. And, you know, you shouldn't be editing this page. You know, I went in and I updated the page to, you know, everything that we know about this issue now. And, you know, Carlos called the guy back and said, thanks, system worked. You know, so that's what we're trying to do. It's responsible. I mean, and this gives, you know, it goes back to, you know, cathedral and the bazaar. You get more eyeballs on the target and be able to kind of see, hey, I've got information to be able to add. What we tell people is you shouldn't trust anything in Intellipedia. Because it could be out of date. It could not be well-sourced. You need to question everything. And we talk about questioning not only everything in Intellipedia, but our finished intelligence products, about questioning what really is the source of our information. Where did we get that data from? So, yes, it is a challenge. There is probably pages that someone created, and then he left the account, and there was, again, because of that grassroots effort, there was no one else to kind of keep it up to date. So, typically what happens, and we could do that, we don't have them now, but that could happen with bots, where we could scan the database and look, because that's all MediaWiki is a database, and look for pages that haven't been updated in 6 months, and slap a template on the top saying, hey, this hasn't been updated in 6 months, buyer beware, you know, so that's what could be done, which can be done in these tools. It's more a little bit more difficult to do in kind of the standard tools, so. Yes, sir.
So how much effort did it actually take to get the organization to allow you to do this stuff, and how high up did you have to go?
We're still working it. As I mentioned, it's really kind of a grassroots effort. We, in the initial stages, we luckily had key players at leadership positions across the community And it certainly wasn't widespread. It was, you know, individuals across the community that were advocates for what we were doing that realized that we needed to change as a community. We needed to bring in some of these more modern tools and make them available so we could kind of debate and challenge ourselves. And so we ended up briefing at the very beginning. We briefed General Hayden at CIA. We briefed, and actually one of the things that's kind of odd about the intelligence community is we had to brief the media to get back into our own community, because what people do is, oh, I didn't realize that Intellipedia, I didn't know that existed until they read it in the New York Times or something like that. And then they go out and they say, oh, we have that? Oh, let's you know, I'm going to sign up. Even the media, trying to get the media involved just so we can, and like I said, we're still kind of in the early adopter stage with this. And I most of us in the kind of in the social software community thinks that if we tried to do this right now, it would probably even be more of a challenge, because we're further away from 9/11, we're further away from the failure to find Iraq, WMD in Iraq. But in the wake of those two issues, it was a real challenge. The community was being challenged to look at different approaches, challenge ourselves, and then Cal's paper came out, so we could kind of pin our thoughts. The Cal's paper, hey, it won this award, and there was a bunch of community leaders that thought it was great. And believe me, we went and we spoke to different audiences, and they'd be like, oh, that's just one guy's opinion. That's not wikis and blogs. Those are a fad. Those things aren't going to last. It was a challenge in the beginning, and it's still a challenge today. I would not try, again, I want to emphasize, don't walk out of here thinking 80% of the intelligence community is doing this. It's more like the other percentage around. So, yes.
Hi, Sean. I'm Dave. I was wondering if you have thoughts about what are the bad things that came along with borrowing these tools, like, say, a Flickr-like thing or a YouTube-like thing, because when we use those in the real world, we're concerned about privacy or maybe the homogeneity of search results, and those could constrain your analysts or something. Have you dealt with bad things coming along with those?
Yes. No tool is perfect, and we're not trying to sell these as perfect tools. There is that kind of challenge with, I mean, we worry about, in the intelligence community, groupthink. And, you know, people look at stuff like Intellipedia and say, oh, that, you know, that can really contribute to groupthink because the first person makes the edit then kind of challenges or kind of channels the discussion in one way, and it's kind of difficult to reverse it. And we're watching out for that. It's a challenge. I don't think the existing tools that we use typically are oblivious to those type of things. We do have things where, you know, again, making edits, and this is a challenge to get people to contribute, is that people are always worried about, well, what if I put something out there that's wrong? And then I'm going to get burned, and there's going to be some witch hunt later on or some investigation. They're going to be able to see my edit, and then, you know, I'm going to be testifying in front of Congress or whatever. And that's where management comes into play. The management needs to kind of, you know, be able to enforce roles in here and be able to protect their people. And we've been able to do that in the past with the old tools. We're going to have to do the same with these new tools too. But it's going to require some understanding by the management. And a lot, again, some of the management looks at these tools and say, you know, they see the Trogdor page or they see all these kind of little templates and they're like, what are people using this for? And they haven't wrapped their heads around the concept yet because the management's focused on making the trains run on time. And this doesn't, you know, right now doesn't make the train run on time. This doesn't make us produce finished intelligence any quicker. The selfish people that have started using it have been able to kind of produce finished intelligence, but they haven't made that connection of how can we use this to, you know, better the community in those respects. So,
thank you.
So I've heard that you have on an individual basis and in a departmental basis levels of protectionism and also people who get it. What kind of interagency cooperation are you starting to see?
Right. It's the whole this whole fabric again on the various networks are accessible by various departments. So this is an interagency effort. from the very start. And it was these kind of pockets of individuals. I mentioned Chris Rasmussen. He's at NGA, the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency. We had people at State Department that wanted to use the CIPRNet network. And they actually, again, I mentioned the YouTube capability. Let's bring up this tab. This is iVideo, and this is a video that they created, uploaded by David Kirby of State Department. They developed these videos to help train their staff on how to use IntelliPedia, but they kept it generic enough so anybody in the community can use it. So here, State Department is helping out the intelligence community, but they're really doing it selfishly for their own good, but everyone can benefit from it. There's an effort kind of underway to bring up all of these tools. But what we do see, and this is kind of a concern, is the development of all these kind of internal wiki instances of wikis. So we have a CIA wiki, NSA has their internal wikis. And that's where we espouse that working at the broadest audience. Because all these are our tools. So there are going to be instances that are going to be internal, but they're not going to be able to keep up with the speed of IntelliPedia, because there's more eyeballs out here than on our internal networks. So, but there needs to be a place where we need to put internal stuff that we might not want to share with the community, and that's where we kind of educate people of, okay, where do you want to place this? Think of audience first when you're trying to do this, and try and work at the broadest audience first.
Thank you. I just wanted to address one thing you said at the start of your talk. We're the good guys. We know how to hack a computer, but we don't.
Yes, I wasn't trying to imply that you weren't. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Hi. My name is Mike Sean. First thing, can I have a lanyard?
Excuse me?
May I have a lanyard?
Sure. You can have this one. Before I get inundated with requests, I only brought one. I'm sorry, but come up later and I can try and get you one.
Okay. More seriously. One of the traditional problems when you're dealing with multiple levels of security is tagging of information. Now, it was quite clear that you had your unclass, your secret and top secret networks. With the higher level networks, do you have modifications to your IntelliPedia instances to specifically tag lower classes so that it's clear what material in a particular page is and is not classified?
Okay. Not quite yet. What we have is, at the top secret network, there is a capability, again, developed by DIA, another part of the Defense Intelligence Agency, to be able to look down to the secret level network. And so what we've done is we've developed a little template that we could put on pages at the top secret level saying, hey, there's also information down at the secret level. Click on this link and it'll take you down to the secret level network. Is that widespread? No. I mean, it really kind of challenges how we do work, as far as typically when you're working at, at CIA or NRO or any facility, it's what's the broadest, network that I have access to, and typically it's that top secret network. In my viewpoint, I think we need to kind of change that. We need to be able to work at the more lower levels, at the secret level, because that's where the military is operating, that's where State Department's operating. And so we need to be able to develop means to be able to contribute to those networks without trying to, switch boxes and everything and going over. But those tools are under development, and I would hazard to say that they're under development and there is a kind of a need for them because of these tools, because people are like, I don't want all of my stuff up at the top secret level. I want it down at the secret level where, people can benefit, more people can benefit from it. And it actually is a challenge for what we think about for classifications in general. I was just switching back to the briefing here, but what was interesting, one of the other interesting side stories we had when we first set up IntelliPedia is we used to have a button under the, under the tools called import from Wikipedia, because obviously there's a lot of good content on Wikipedia and you don't want to recreate the wheel. Let's just bring up the Wikipedia page and then go from there. We eventually disabled it because people were just bringing up the Wikipedia page and saying, okay, I'm done. And we were like, no, you need to add the classified content now. But one of these pages that was brought up we got a call the one day from another organization we won't name, which basically said, you got to take this page down. And we were like, okay, what page is it? And they told us what page. We went to the page. And again, this is on the top secret network. And they're like, you need to take it down because it's got compartmented information. And we're like, that's the Wikipedia page. and they were like, no, it doesn't matter. You still need to take it down. It's got, and we were like, what do you want us to do? You know, for more sensitive content, see Wikipedia? I mean, it was just. So I believe that page is still up on a top secret note. But it does challenge because there is this aggregation issue, too, where even if we're on the unclassified level and we aggregate enough data, is that classified now? Or, you know, and it really kind of challenges how we think about classification as well.
So the U in the headers, is that just a reminder that that is an unclassified section? The U in the header in front of user Sean?
Yes. That's what's known as portion marks in the intelligence community. So you're talking about this U right here.
Yep.
If I can highlight it. I highlighted everything else but that. So that U is unclassified. And then if on this level, if there was something that was called for official use only or, sensitive but unclassified, whatever the new controlled unclassified information, you would put a slash, CUI or something like that. That's kind of our tradecraft and how we portion mark things in the community so people can identify it.
Thank you.
Sure.
Oh, does the CIA have cookies?
yes, I think so. let's go, sir, in the back over here.
Mm-hmm. Hi there. My name's Paul Anderson. Thanks for your talk. I was just wondering if you could say something about any kinds of features or facilities that you would like to see in the future in terms of developing this. I mean, I was thinking in particular that the information that you have there is unstructured, so I was thinking about ways of searching and structuring and processing that.
Yes. That's definitely where we would like to go. We would love to see a box that can kind of scan the database and do like what we mentioned earlier about flagging different articles and then also kind of extensions onto this. Again, this is open source code, so we can pull a lot of the data out. We actually have a developer that's working on bringing some of the brilliant tools that are already working against Wikipedia into the intelligence community, stuff like Kate's tool that kind of shows how a person has been contributing to various articles. There's Wiki Mind Map, I think someone brought over and tried to start using that. That's the great thing about this open source tools is because, again, we're putting it out on the platform and we can get other tools to work against it. And we definitely, believe me, if there's anyone here that can kind of help us develop those things, that's kind of the next logical step for us. We're not there yet. The DNI, I keep saying we, but it's really the DNI that deploys these tools, is working on developing a development server where all the tools will be out there, and then kind of the developers can kind of go in and build kind of little tools to go against the data and build things like that. But that's definitely the direction we need to head. Yes?
Hi. So say you've had 1,000 edits on a page, and you have a page on a country, and part of the topic about dealing with that country is dealing with a person in that country. And sometime in the future, the information that you've listed about that person needs to become classified, and you're on an unclassified page. Do you have a procedure to handle that? Do you classify the entire page? Do you remove information and take out parts of the edits? Have you thought of this? Have you run into it?
Yes, we have run into it. Even on the top secret network, even though it's top secret, there's still information that can't be put on that network because of compartments. That are only are restricted or controlled more tightly, and we've had dozens, maybe scores of times where people have uploaded this content, and then what we have is what is called a data spill procedure, where we identify the portions of the article that need to be deleted. So if if the entire history needs to be deleted, then we would delete the entire history. But for the most part, it's typically, oh, I added this, you know, this section here, so we only need to delete the two, you know, the two revisions of it. And so we can go through and just delete certain revisions, and we keep a log of what we delete as well. And again, when I say we, it's the DNI that goes through this process. DNI also looks through the search engine caches to make sure that information is not there as well. So it has happened. We have developed that procedure to do it. That procedure has been implemented multiple times, and it has worked fairly effectively. And that's what we call risk management. I mean, and this allows us to kind of, make mistakes, but be able to fix them very quickly. That's one of the things that Jimmy Wales talks about with Wikipedia, is being able, instead of putting barriers up in front of people to prevent them from making a mistake, let them make the mistake, but be able to fix it very quickly. And that's what we can do especially with IntelliPedia.
Thank you.
Sure. In the back there.
Hi, thanks. So I'm curious if you talked about being in a very compartmentalized and top-down structure, or that the intelligence community operates that way. This is very bottom-up and kind of flat. How much of an effect has that had on the organization of information? How much has that been kind of evolutionary, the way that maybe ideas or concepts are put together and organized?
Yeah, it's a challenge. Like I mentioned, there's a lot of organizations that... we've had crises where any type of crisis, and that was actually been a really good benefit for IntelliPedia, is whenever there's a crisis that we're trying to follow, there's usually a page that's created in IntelliPedia, and people can add their content there. However, when you have some organizations kind of create their own pages for their own division or their own organization, and that's where they're making their updates, we find later on, because they're working organizationally, not topically, we find months later, oh, look, there's some information out here that could have helped us, 3 months ago when we were working that crisis. So it is a challenge. I'm not saying we're 100% successful, but that's what we're trying to do. And we try and advertise when we have those crisis pages. We typically put them on the front page so people will see them immediately when they hit the site. People blog about it, say, hey, we've got this page created. If you have information, add to it. But it is completely grassroots. So there is the potential that we will miss some data that might be off in some organizationally based page. But we probably would have missed out anyways if they were working in a Web 1.0 environment or whatever.
Working in government and having the type of culture that government has, I was wondering if you had any problems empowering people to actually make the contributions, because I know every time in like an open source community, when there's a wiki that goes up, invariably somebody posts to a mailing list going, this is wrong on the wiki, and you kind of look at them and you're like, so change it, And right. there are issues around things like archiving old stuff. You have a new procedure to do something and maybe it's not quite right yet, so you want to save the old stuff. But how do you get... Did you have problems encountering, did you encounter problems in having people like be able to realize, hey, I can change this, or was it?
Right. Some of the things that have happened is, as I alluded to previously, where people send an email, oh, I didn't want to out you, but here's the changes that need to be made. And even Charlie, the person I talked about working the leaders in Southern Iraq, He didn't come in kind of gung-ho, I want to use these tools or whatever. He didn't even really know what they were. And when, we told him, like, and both Charlie and other people, like, okay, now, in our sabbatical, we're going to teach you how to use blogs. And people were like, blogs? I have to take a shower after doing that? I mean, come on, what is that? So for Charlie, we basically almost had to stand behind him and push buttons for him and say, push this button, in order to get him the blog. Because he was like, I don't really want to push my ideas out there. Again, that's a cultural issue, not really a technological issue. But when he did blog, he just kind of came up with some idea off the top of his head and said, well, we should create, this type of organization in the intelligence community. He put it out there, and within like 3 or 4 hours, he got a comment from someone in Djibouti saying, you know, I was thinking the same thing, blah, 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 and I had some ideas. And immediately, Charlie's hooked. He's like, how would I have made that contact otherwise? But it is a challenge because we've had individuals who often say, well, I want to make sure it's right before I put information out there. I'm going to work on it offline in a Word document. Then as soon as it's ready, then I'm going to put it out there. And this is not about, you know, again, it's not about finished intelligence, whatever that really means. But it's about kind of making those edits, making those changes, and being able to, this is our approach in the intelligence community for the longest time, and probably for any organization, has always been edit, then publish. This is publish, then edit. And that's a challenge for a lot of people to get their kind of mind around.
Yes, sir. Obviously, it seems like you don't have a lot of compartmentalization controls, which was one of the criticisms after 9/11 that more information should be shared, and so that's kind of a step towards that. Do you have any auditing, for example, if there's, you know, the guy who's supposed to be working on the leaders in southern Iraq, do you have any auditing to say, well, hey, for the last 4 days, he's looked through every top secret page on Cuba, and if he has stuff to add, that's great, but do you have any sort of auditing or oversight on that?
Right. If the DNI has it, I'm not aware of it, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, because that's how the intelligence community works. That is something that's definitely needs to be done. I mean, that's one of the things that concerns a lot of our security staffs about these tools is, wow, they're really broad and open, and this is not need to know, and that's how the culture that we grew up in was need to know. And, you know, why is the person that's working Iraq on the Cuba page, you know, all the, you know, and maybe it might be because in their previous, you know, job, they worked Cuba, and they have, you know, valuable contributions to make. And we've actually seen that happen kind of, and it gets back to the point this lady made over here, is the kind of challenge this presents to people that might be experts in a subject that they're not working currently. We had a crisis in an African country that where, you know, we had this crisis page, and this analyst, it was primarily one analyst, the CIA, was contributing to this page, but she sent out emails, and she blogged about it, and she said, hey, this is where I'm putting information on this crisis, and then eventually she got, like, a phone call from, you know, someone else saying, hey, I'm going to send you a bunch of stuff in email that, you know, because I used to work that country for 7 years, and I've got all this data that might be helpful for you to kind of analyze. And she was like, well, you know, why don't you just add it to the page? And the person's like, well, I work in another part of the organization, and I don't work that country anymore, and I'm worried about if my boss, you know, sees it, and I'm editing that page when I should really be doing work over here, but I've got all this data. So this, in my opinion, that's a success story because the system worked. She got the data she needed, but we need to kind of work on the cultural aspect of, hey, you know, even though you're working over here, you can still, you know, use your Google time, you know, 20% to be able to kind of, which we don't have, by the way, we need it, but you know, where you could do some work over here because you have expertise in that issue. But as far as auditing, we are all for it. That needs to happen. We need some heuristic capabilities to kind of look at what are people editing, what are people looking at, because that is a concern that our security folks have with these tools. So, yes.
So you said something interesting a minute ago about the culture and the need to know kind of mindset. I was trained as a linguist, and most of my classmates either, if they didn't go into academia, they ended up in intelligence. And certainly, I'm a very naturally curious person. I want to know about everything. And for me, I didn't even consider intelligence for that reason.
Sure.
You know, because I did not want to be in an environment where I couldn't ask any question that I wanted to. You know, and so I'm
wondering. Can ask them. You might just not get the answer.
So you know, I'm curious whether you're thinking about, you know, down the road, you know, as the culture changes, using that even in recruiting about, you know, this is not your father's CIA.
Right. Yes. And I think that's why we've been given a fairly broad leash with dealing with the media. Obviously, went over where there's a, you know, there was a time where I thought I was working for our public relations office. I was dealing up in their office so often about Intellipedia, and it's a good news story. And most news stories written about CIA typically aren't good news stories. So they are, you know, they're willing to kind of talk about this, and I believe it does help with recruiting because again, it's not. You know, not your father's intelligence community. It's, you know, we are bringing in these tools. We, you know, the and trying to make changes to the community. There is still this kind of there is a need to know in some respects. But what I used to talk about with when we first started this, and I would come home and I'd be frustrated and talking it over with my wife, and my wife would be like, "Why don't they get it?" And I'd be like, it's really, I mean, this community grew up with this need-to-know concept where it was always need-to-know first, and there was no kind of need-to-share concept or what's now called responsibility to provide. So I said to her, it's kind of like telling someone that they've been raised wrong when you start bringing in these tools that you're like, oh, you know, put things at the broadest audience. Well, no, that's not how I learned. That's not how I grew up in this community. So it is really a challenge to the culture. But we've made, significant progress with, again, very just a grassroots effort that we've done. But I think it will help overall with recruiting, and then also opening out to, you know, other communities that can help us develop some of the tools that we need to exploit some of this data as well. Yeah.
Mike, I wanted to ask a question before we leave. Again, translating back to some of the stuff that people deal with earlier, you mentioned that essentially the reputation, what you put down is truly important. So translating that back to MySpace, for example, or my place of employment, we have engineering work that's produced a lot of modeling, simulations, et cetera. And then at some point, people retire, et cetera. That's it. They're not going to produce that work anymore, yet there is a body of work there. And there will not be any more attribution. That somebody either has to inherit that or it's going to disappear. And so some places have maybe some processes to essentially hand it off to somebody else. But in your case, you said, you know, if there is no attribution, that person doesn't exist. Does that mean, is there an automatic process to, like, sort of parking lot that, or it disappears if nobody takes it?
Right. I would say with existing tools, you know, with Word and Share Drive and stuff like that, it does disappear. I think that's one of the reasons Carlos, that 69-year-old employee at CIA, wanted to use this tool, these tools, because it felt like it gave him a legacy that he, issues that he worked on back in, you know, in the 60s and 70s, he could create pages on, and he's got a thing that will outlast him. And with the intelligence community, if any of you are familiar with the intelligence community, a lot of people, it's remarkable. No, it seems like no one ever leaves. It's they'll retire and they'll come back 3 weeks later. They're wearing a different colored badge, and you're like, you're still here. But because it is a calling, really. I mean, people want to, you know, the people that work at the intelligence community want to serve their country, and they typically don't want to leave. They want to continue contributing. And what happens is, you know, because we have that attribution with these tools, we can go back and be able to kind of say, oh, well, look, Carlos worked this issue. Let's see where else he is in the community now. Or if he's not in the community, maybe there's a way to kind of reach out to him and get his expertise, even though he's outside the community, because we do a lot of, you know, outreach to, you know, academia and other organizations. So there is an ability, because of that attribution with these tools, to be able to do that.
All right. Okay. It doesn't look like there's any more questions, so thank you very much for attending.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Let's go get coffee.